Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Pete Mallard, who is the manager of the Barn Retreat near Totnes in Devon. And he's going to talk to us today about the barn, what it does, the ethos behind it, the value of going on retreat, and how all this might relate to the Middle Way. Hello, Pete. Welcome to the MWS podcast.
Hello, Barry. Thanks.
Okay, could you start then, Pete, by telling us something about your background?
Meditation then for me started in the early 70s when I was at university, and that was transcendental meditation, which was around at the time, and I did that for a few years, and then a bit later on I had a bit of a break, I guess, and then I got into something called Santmat, which is a similar concentration based meditation, mantra based meditation. I did that for about 8 years, but it didn't really work for me. I was going through a difficult time in my life towards the end of that period, and I was a school teacher at the time, and I was meditating in the mornings and going to school and then getting cross with kids at school. So I just thought, this is not making any difference to my life now. Maybe it's going to be upcoming light into the distant future, but I need something that's going to do something now. And I was teaching comparative religion. Primary school, this was, teaching comparative religion, following a TV program after all of this, and we looked at various religions, and they asked the same question of each religion, or person from each religion, questions that an 11-year-old child might be interested in, like how was the world created, and what happens after you die, and these sorts of questions. And in the teacher's notes, in fact, for the Buddhist teacher, they said, the children might be a little bit surprised by the Buddhist answer to these questions, and indeed they were, and I was. The Tibetan, it was a nun from Samiling, she said, having been asked these questions, she said, a Buddhist would say they're very silly questions because you can't answer them anyway. Why not ask questions like, where does suffering come from? Is it possible to reduce suffering? And is it possible to be more compassionate and caring to each other, and so forth? And I was quite taken by this, and not sure if the kids were. Well, they were, actually. We had a great week on Buddhism, and I went out and found myself some Buddhists. So that's how the Buddhism started with me.
Okay.
Now, the people I found were NKT, the Kadampa people, who they're kind of everywhere, and Tibetan. And I stayed with them for a very short period of time, went on a couple of retreats, but was a little bit sort of troubled by the doctrine and the amount of doctrine that one was supposed to sort of accept. So then I dropped away from that. Although, having said that, I did meet my partner at one of their retreats. So that was a plus, my current partner. And then I came across Stephen Batchelor's Buddhism Without Beliefs, the book. And it's a kind of a book which I often say to people, you don't even need to read the book, you just read the title.
Yeah.
And then you sort of get it. So that's what got me into Buddhism.
Okay, and then what led you to become involved with the barn?
Well, I came down to Sharpham to see Stephen, and also across to Gaia House to see various teachers and the barn. And a new role was being set up at the barn. I was currently a head teacher, and the new role was being set up at the barn for a non-residential manager. Before then, it had been run by two managers who were getting burnt out, bizarrely, running a retreat centre, because the retreat had changed so much, the way it was being run. It's another story. So it was decided to work more on the lines of Gaia House, where volunteer coordinators actually hold the retreats, and then a non-residential manager looks after the all the other tedious stuff. That was a role which somebody told me about, so I applied for it and got it, and here I am, 5 years down the line, still loving it.
Okay, and then, so could you tell us a little bit about the barn? What was the general ethos there from the beginning, or is it something that has evolved, or a bit of both?
Yeah, a bit of both, I guess, because, I mean, at the moment, I see the barn as being a place where people can find a different way to live their lives, or a better way to live their lives. People get so caught up in society's norms of living, which at the moment are getting more and more frantic, more and more grasping. Everyone's trying to outdo each other. You know, success is so important. Success in society's terms, which is like a measurable success, with how much money we earn and what position of power we have and so forth. And people come to the barn and realise that this is all a bit of a nonsense, really, and can reevaluate, can stand out of their life and reevaluate. And I guess that's what Morris Ash, who owned Sharpham and turned it into Sharpham Trust, that's what he was looking for. He believed that he talked about West meeting East, and he looked to the East for a different way of society, creating a better society. And his preferred religion, if you will, was Buddhism. He wasn't a Buddhist, but he really liked the way he saw Buddhists were living their lives and their philosophy. So what he did is he asked Christopher Titmuss to help him set up the barn. And Christopher was working, well, he set up Guy House. He was a bit tied up with Guy House at the time, so he asked Michael Jeffries, who actually now is still chair of trustees at Guy House, to do this for him, guided by Christopher. And the barn was to be a place where people would come and inspirit the land, was his expression. He wanted people to connect with the land and really find their true self through working on the land. And he wanted the community to set that up, because he had this sense of disconnect right back there in the 80s, of disconnect between people and the land and indeed each other. So it's a similar, because we still do work on the land, and people gain a lot of benefit from this working on the land, sort of grounding themselves, getting into the sensations of the body, all the good stuff that we do in meditation, but doing it out on the land.
I'm just thinking that a lot of retreats focus a bit more intensively on formal sitting and walking meditation, but whereas the barn seems to focus more on mindfulness in everyday activities. Would it be all right in saying that to an extent?
Absolutely, yes, yes. Middle way for you, Barry. The whole idea of the barn is to bring mindfulness, bring meditation into daily life, and to help people see a way of bringing meditation into daily life. So I go to the Gaia House a lot still, and it's a place where we can develop our practice or strengthen our practice, our meditation practice. What I used to find with going to Gaia House or any other retreat is back in my teaching days was I'd go on retreat and I'd live that way of life, and I'd as it were get into that rut, that way of being, which is a beautiful and wonderful way of being. And I have every intention to take that back into my ordinary life. And within a couple of days of being back at work, then it's frantic again, and it's all forgotten, and it's a different rut. People still have the same problem with this at the barn. They talk about how can we keep this going in our life, and I use this analogy of here at the barn, you are living in a beautiful rut. When you get back into your ordinary life, you'll jump out of this rut, drop into your old rut, and you won't even see the rut. You won't remember what it looks like, because you're deep, deep down into your everyday living rut. So getting back to your question, really, what we're trying to do is sort of develop kind of a rut which is a little bit more akin to ordinary life. So there's communication going on, there's work going on, there's the egos coming up all the time, how I relate to people and so forth.
Okay. You mentioned earlier that you've been influenced by Stephen Batchelor. Now Stephen's interpretation of Buddhism is one more of doing rather than believing, and he's not particularly concerned with the more metaphysical claims found in Buddhism, such as enlightenment, karma and rebirth, etc. Is a similar interpretation of Buddhism employed in the barn?
Yes, Stephen is quite gently irritated by some of these some of these ideals. Because again, similar to what I was talking about, it, for me, what matters is how we live our lives now. And agreed, when we look at the Four Noble Truths, Stephen will talk of them as Four Noble Tasks. Uh-huh. So it's not about, there is dukkha, and that's it, fine. It's a case of how to fully understand dukkha. So the task is to continually look back at where dukkha impacts upon my life. And then likewise, the second, third and fourth Noble Truths. So be referring to them all the time. And that's really how I I was going to say guide. It's a bit much to say I'm guiding people, but this is the sort of inquiry which I like people to engage with at the barn. And I do quite a lot of Q&As around this, really, and it is very much about how is this working for you. In fact, last night, Diana St. Ruth was teaching at the barn, and she talked about wisdom and saying how wisdom is not something which you can learn. It's not something you can enforce upon yourself or indeed somebody else. Wisdom comes from within, and it's meditation that helps us access that wisdom, to realize that that wisdom is there and to allow it to come out and have an impact, or should we say an effect on the way we live our lives. So it's this sort of gently noticing, this is insight meditation, I guess, noticing how we're living our lives and then being able to adjust and tweak and change slightly as a result of that wisdom from within.
But don't you think to an extent, by reflecting on our experience, that we can, you know, gradually make better decisions? You know, arguably an adult in many respects is wiser than a young child because of that experience that they've had.
Absolutely, yes, I love being old from that point of view, yes. But I also remember the times when I would think, oh, that's a really bad thing to do, but let's still keep doing it.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't somehow really understood deep down inside that it was a good thing to do. It's like if you're walking along the street or on a country footpath and you pick an old crisp packet up, are you picking it up because, you know, it's quite an inquiry. Am I picking this up because people would be impressed with this, or somebody that's watching me would like me to do this? Or did it just feel right that crisp packet is better off in my bag and then in the bin than it is in there, and that just feels right?
Yeah, yeah.
Noticing how we sort of feel our way through the world rather than doing things because we ought to do them.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, that's a difference I feel that happens as we get older. But I really think it's because of my meditation practice, my mindfulness, if you will, practice, that helps me to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I like that. Okay, so how does a normal week pan out at the barn?
So most people only stay for a week. I mean, some people stay for longer than a week, but it's a six-day week, actually. People arrive on a Sunday, and 10 people, and all different people from different backgrounds. And it's what happens is that they just settle in. There are meetings to describe how the week's going to pan out and who's going to do what, explaining how the house works, a meditation, guided meditation. By Monday, people are starting to get to know each other. But it's really interesting, I find, over the week, how different people start to connect. People often talk about them being like-minded people. You know, it's lovely they say to people, a bunch of like-minded people. And I often say that's not quite true, because many of us aren't like-minded. Many people that come to the barn aren't like-minded. I've got a great example, actually, of a woman who had just sold her yurt and was homeless, yurtless, she would say, didn't know where she was going next, came to the barn. She came for a couple of weeks. I think she stayed for 3 weeks. And one of those weeks, a woman who was a NATO analyst joined us. And she worked for General Petraeus. She was American. She lived in this country. And she was very much the rational-minded sort of person. And you kind of think, how are these two going to get on with each other? You know, how are these going to meet up with each other? And by the end of the week, the NATO analyst was saying, if ever you're in Cambridge, to the yurtless person, if ever you're in Cambridge, you must drop by. You must stay with me, because they just were getting on so well with each other. And it's this getting on, as I say again, at a heart level rather than at a cognitive mind level, this sort of caring, compassionate state where basically we're the same. So that's basically how a week pans out, as you say, or that's the result of a week. I mean, the actual structure of the week is Monday and Tuesday are regular days. We have a check-in, sharing meeting each morning, which is a great way of people being able to state their truth and understand each other. I particularly like it in those sharing meetings if people don't say, yeah, I'm having a great time, the weather's fantastic, the food's great, and I love the people and so forth. I like it if they talk about their difficulties, because it gives other people permission to take their mask off.
Yeah.
And this usually happens by Tuesday, and then the real person's coming through and people feel safe and relaxed and comfortable, even though they're with people from different backgrounds and different understandings of ways of living.
And do you, if you're feeling not 100%, do you open up to? And
Oh, yes. It's quite funny, actually. A few weeks ago, my partner Anne and I were kind of having a little bit of a gripe with each other. And so in the sharing, we just say, this is how I am right now. And I said, I just mentioned this, said it, not feeling too good at the moment, because and talked a little bit about the background to this. And then another person later on, this was only on Tuesday, said, oh dear, I don't know if there's any hope for me. You've been meditating all these years and you're still having arguments with your wife. So this is someone who didn't quite understand what insight meditation is all about. Yeah. You know, I'm afraid I was very flippant and said, I'm sorry, I'm just not enlightened. but anyway, yes, I think it's very important to, and also the coordinators, so that we're all very honest. We're modelling authenticity as much as possible, as much as possible. And obviously, it's difficult all the time. Wednesday is a silent day all day. I haven't already said, have I, that we're silent from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. every day, so everyone's getting a taste of silence.
Yeah.
Silent for the first part of the morning with their breakfast and the task and so forth, the meditation session. And then Wednesday is silent all day, so it's 36 hours of silence from Tuesday evening till Thursday morning. And Thursday, that's when everything really comes together and people are really settled. They've got to know each other. They know who they're flowing around, and they flow around each other in this beautiful way of just sort of being and connecting and somehow just working through the senses. And there's a huge amount of appreciation. We talk a lot about generosity and appreciation and compassion and so forth. And this is what people are linking up with. Something I talk about at the end of every week is how not only are we developing meditation and mindfulness here at the barn, but perhaps more importantly, perhaps what is really is key to the barn experience, is the development of generosity and compassion and understand metta. We do quite a bit of metta meditation during the week, loving kindness meditation. And I also talk about the Buddha's expression, what the mind rests upon, the mind becomes. And during the week at the barn, because people have loosened their natural desires, the natural cravings, they're still there, but they're kind of settled down a bit. The aversions, they might pop up, but they can settle down. With loosening those, they're finding they are opening up. I'm opening my arms up here to you now, Barry. I know this is an audio, but I'm opening up to you. And they open up to each other again at this heart level. And what I suggest is that they actually keep noticing that. Keep noticing that when it happens in life. Notice it whilst it's happening at barn. Notice it when it happens in life. And that's such a fantastic practice.
Okay, the barn has really grown in popularity over the last few years. What do you put that down to, Pete?
It's the national or international interest in mindfulness. It's everywhere now. It's in education, it's health, it's MPs are doing it. It's been done everywhere. And people are hearing about it and just coming our way. And it's not wacky, weird stuff anymore. It's been proved scientifically at Exeter University, Oxford University, etc., that it makes a big difference to people's lives. So people are coming to learn to meditate. They're coming because they can meditate and they want to improve their practice. Or they're coming because they've been on a mindfulness-based stress reduction course or whatever. And they want to help develop a practice, settle a practice in, or just try a retreat. But it's just so nationally known.
Okay. And the type of meditation that's practiced at the barn is insight meditation. Can you explain what that is for someone who's not very familiar with meditation and how that might differ from other forms of meditation like transcendental meditation?
Yes. Okay. Well, easy for me because I've done the both and one worked and one didn't.
Yeah.
So this is just my story, really.
Yeah.
Transcendental meditation really follows it is similar to the meditation the Buddha was taught before he developed his form of meditation, his middle way. And that was one of just pure concentration. And through that, developing the absorptions, the jhanas, getting into higher levels of absorption. And it was a great buzz. It was the drug of the day, which many people took. Probably a much more wholesome drug than we might use today. The trouble with it was that he would get into these states of absorption, come out of them, and the world was still a bum place to be. Everything was the same, and the way he related to the world was the same. So then he, as we know the story of the Buddha, that's he eventually developed his middle way, which you might come on to in a bit, but which included mindfulness that was being mindful of Satipatthana Sutta, mindful of body states, mindful of emotions, mindful of feelings and so forth, and mindful of the Dharma. So it really was a case of reflecting, but not in a cognitive way, rather like I was talking before, just being aware of how I meet the world.
Okay.
So finally on that, on insight meditation, a lot of people do get confused. They think that the insight ought to happen during the meditation. They ought to be able to sit there and cross the legs and then bing, these sort of ideas and thoughts and new beliefs come into their head. It can happen. We can have insights during meditation. But most of the insight, certainly in my experience, I think generally speaking, is off the cushion. It's in daily life as a result of being able to settle and calm and notice how I'm responding to the world. And through noticing and realizing what's happening, then things naturally change.
Do you think it's helpful to go on retreat regularly?
Absolutely, yes, and I do. And I don't go on retreats so regularly now as I used to when I had a very busy, hectic life. But it's really important. It was really important for me to be able to stand back and reflect on the way I was meeting the world. And it did make a difference, to the way I worked. I became much more calm and therefore must have been a better person to work with. But how often we go on to retreat is... it's similar. People ask me how much should we meditate, and it's 10 minutes for some person, half an hour for somebody else. It's rather like, and that question is rather like, how much exercise should we do? Is the example I use, or the analogy I use on that one. So each to their own, really. Some people want to be the marathon runners. Some people want to get to the gym and really go for it. Other people just like to do a little bit in their life and sort of take the stairs instead of the escalator and so forth. So retreats, meditation, everyone has to find their own balance.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings me to the question about balance. What is your understanding of the middle way, and how do you think it relates to what we've been talking about today?
Pretty much we've talked about it, haven't we? Because the Buddha first introduced the middle way when he found the middle way between austerity, when he was trying to go through the life of austerity and fasting and so forth, and the other way of indulgence. And he found the way between the two, and that's what we're trying to do. And that suits Western meditators, I think, tremendously. And that's really why meditation, mindfulness, is taking off. And indeed, the new insight meditation tradition, I'm putting inverted commas around tradition, or insight meditation tradition, it is the middle way for Western minds. It's not a tradition yet, but it is a developing tradition, which will find a middle way between clinical mindfulness, by which I mean just you go on the 8-week course and you take it as a form of medication almost, and the more ethical eightfold path, as opposed to the onefold path of pure mindfulness, the eightfold path with the precepts and all the rest of the ethics that we have in Buddhism. Those two are coming together, and that is a form of middle way. And then we also have the middle way of, am I going to go on retreat for 6 months, or am I going to be in the hectic world? Well, hey, let's do a bit of both. Let's try and blend this together and find a balance in our lives and keep reflecting upon which way do we want to tweak this balance, a little bit more meditation, maybe a little bit more engagement in the world. So that's a middle path.
Okay, my last question, Pete, if people wanted to find out more about the barn or if interested in coming on retreat, etc., how would they go about it?
Yeah, just Google us. Google the barn or barn retreat, in fact, or you can Google Sharpen Trust. We are part of the Sharpen Trust, which also put on other retreats at Sharpen House. So we've got quite a range of things happening across the trust now, which I'm sure people would be interested in. The Sharpen House retreats are more mindfulness with yoga, mindfulness with walking and so forth. So a lot of interesting stuff going on. It's developing.
Great. Okay, well, it's been really interesting talking to you today, Pete. Thank you very much for telling us a bit about the barn.
Yeah, thanks very much, Barry. Cheers.
You
can find out more about Middle Way philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.